Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
What's up, everybody? Bros Pod is, of course, brought to you by Bet Online. The holiday season is off and rolling with the NFL in full stride and the NBA and NHL hitting mid-season form. BetOnline is your number one destination for all your sports wagering info. With up-to-the-minute sports wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions, BetOnline is the top spot for everything pro and amateur sports. And not just the big four. BetOnline has info available at your fingertips with both desktop and mobile access at any time for almost any sport that's played, from MMA to international soccer. So head to BetOnline today and remember to use our promo code BELEAV, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. We have a great pod for you today. Bill and I are joined by author John Harris. He's author of the book Tomlin, The Soul of a Football Coach. So we'll talk about Mike Tomlin and the job he has done his entire career with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Once again, Pittsburgh is 7-4 entering into this weekend's games. Second in the AFC North, despite offensive and defensive rankings that are at the bottom of the league. We don't know how he does it, but we'll talk to John Harris and get some insight on the man who is Mike Tomlin. So hold tight. We'll be back right after the sounds of our guy, Steve Wilson.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. Bill Roden. I'm here in we normally say undisclosed location, but since I'm working, I'm here in Baltimore. Just watched the Ravens run through the Cincinnati Bengals in a game that just reinforced how brutal football is, how unforgiving it is, and how your life as a football player is very fragile, you know. And we'll talk about that and more with our guest, the great John Harris. But first, let me bring in my friend and co-host, great Jamal Murphy. Murph, what's going on?
Everything's good over here, Bill. Like you said, I was watching that Monday night game. Thursday night game. And you're right. Guys were going down like flies. Andrews out for the season. Burrow out for the season. So it's rough out here. It's rough out there, man. But like you said, we have a great guest today. We have John Harris, who is author of Tomlin, The Soul of a Football Coach. He was also a longtime journalist, worked at places such as Pittsburgh Tribune Review, Philadelphia Inquirer, written for ESPN's Anscape, and a lot of other places. I could go on and on. He's also the author of a book on Edgerrin James called From Gold Teeth to Gold Jacket. I love that.
Pretty interesting, too.
That's a great title. So, Mr. Harris, thank you for joining us.
Hey, guys. Good to be here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, my first question, particularly with Tomlin, congratulations on the book. And I'm very intrigued by Tomlin. Did he participate in this, or was this participation without him?
He did not. It's a biography. It's interesting. It's so Mike Tomlin-ish. Yeah. I don't think he's at all. I know some biographies, you know, people don't really want to have anything to do with it. I think he's good with it. I know he's good with it because his brother, Ed, is like, talks to me all the time in it. And they're very close. They're the only siblings. So I figured if he wasn't comfortable with it, his brother would not have talked to me. His brother gave me so much insight that, that, you know, I really wouldn't have gotten the other way. And several people I've interviewed mentioned, hey, Coach T gave me his blessing. So he's aware of it. But, you know, I'm looking at it like it's not his story, maybe the way he's looking at it. And I'm cool with it, but I don't know everything that's in it. So, but that's just me trying to read his mind.
I know that a friend of Kevin Merida and Mike Fletcher did this book on Clarence Thomas. Uh-huh. And which, of course, he didn't participate in, and they sent him the book, and he sent it back. So I don't know if he did that.
I'm in the process of sending him one. I don't think he'll send it back. I mean, it's funny when I reached out to his brother, I didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, I got his number. I texted him. He texted me back. He said, "Well, you know, it's my brother in this project." I said, "No, he's not." I was very upfront with him. He said, "I'll get back to you." And like a few hours later, he texted me back. He said, "Let's do it." No so way. I got to believe that he put in a call to the 412 and just told his brother about it. And I think I was surprised, to be honest with you. I didn't know that there wasn't a Mike Tomlin book. When I started researching it, I had assumed there was a book or two on him, and there wasn't, which really surprised me. So, and like timing is everything. I think this year is very interesting. I think a lot of people are following this whole NFL, the Steelers. They're 6-3, but people are trying to figure out how. So this Mike Tomlin magic, I'm watching everybody talking about this guy. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. And it's a very interesting season. So he continues to be a talking point even in year 17.
Yeah, no, it's great timing on the book because, like you said, I've been talking about him. Everybody's talking about him. Trying to figure out how he's accomplishing this, you know, 6-3. I think they're like close to last in defense, close to last in offense. I don't know how it's happening. But yeah. What made you? I know you covered him for a while in Pittsburgh, but what made you want to write this book?
I mean, I thought he deserved a book. To be honest with you, I mean, I know the Eagles coach who's now at Jacksonville. When he won a Super Bowl, he had a book. And, I mean, Mike Tomlin won the Super Bowl quite a while ago, but I just figured this guy, I mean, he's had a tremendous amount of success. He's supplanted his mentor, Tony Dungy, as the winningest, you know, NFL African-American coach. And has had tremendous success, you know, and of course, everybody keeps talking about he's never had a losing season. I just think he's an intriguing guy. I mean, I was talking to somebody earlier. He doesn't do commercials, even though he could. He's just got this figure on the sideline, and it's a mysterious figure. He reveals a little bit at press conferences. People love his press conferences. And that's pretty much all you really get from him. And as I learned covering him for like 6-7 years, you get what he wants you to get. We weren't necessarily the best of friends. He didn't give me very much of what I wanted. But he was just – that's just the way he was as a coach. I mean, I feel like that's the way he felt like he had to be successful. And nothing was going to dissuade him from that philosophy. And it's worked pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to some people, and I'm trying to rack my brain. They did a documentary about all the black NFL coaches, you know, and They said only a couple people didn't do it. Art Shell didn't do it, and of course, Tony Dungy. I mean, not Tony. Tony did it. Tony was, you know, Tony. He was very. But the other one was Mike Tomlin. Do it. He just said. He said he told somebody, man, I'm just tired. You know.
The Washington Post. I think one of.
Oh, that's what he is
for this year. He was noticeably not. Maybe I overlooked it, but I didn't see him in that.
No. That was it. That was it. I was talking to Jerry Brewer. Brewer was part of that. He said, that's what it was. And he was saying, Thomas just said, no, I don't want to be involved. Yeah. So, you know, I'm just curious about his racial thing, you know, because I saw it once when the Undefeated did something in Newport News. And it was him and I think somebody else. And Mike was on the panel, you know. And so I said, oh, okay. You know, he's there and he's, you know, talking and being up front. But that was it, you know. So what was your professional relationship like? You know, did race ever come up?
Not really. I can't really recall ever, you know, a situation happening when I was covering the team. When he was there, I mean, his race was in your face in a market like Pittsburgh, which I was in a lot of markets. And from a media standpoint, for a person of color, there's no other market like Pittsburgh. I have to be honest. It's very, very different. So I see a lot of irony in the fact that he's been the head coach there for 17 years in a market that in many ways has never really totally embraced him from a media market.
Really?
And as an African-American reporter, there were times when I probably expected more from him and didn't get it. And so I'll be honest with you, before writing this book, I had to kind of have come to Jesus moment and really think about it and lay whatever personal, we had no issues, but whatever personal thoughts I had about it. And I just felt like his story deserves to be told. It hasn't been told. And I think just watching his career and maybe how people respond to some of the things that he's done. He wins a Super Bowl, but he won them with Bill Cowher's players. He won a Super Bowl with Ben Roethlisberger. You know, it was always something, some reason why he won. It had nothing to do with him. But when things didn't go right, Mike Tomlin lost control. So I write about it in the book. I wonder, watching him at press conferences, how did you not go off on that dude for asking you that question? Because I would have. So as a black reporter serving this black coach in this, you know, predominantly white media market, I present some of that as well, just my observations and how he's been able to succeed and just let everything go off his back. He's had his moments, you know, when he brought in the coach from Miami, Flores, which maybe surprised a lot of people, and brought him in. That's a young Mike Tomlin probably wouldn't have done that, you know, right?
Why is that?
I think he feels like he has more authority and control. I don't know if he's always had that, to be honest with you. So at year 14 or 15, when he made that decision, I thought that was a statement.
That was a statement.
I know he did the Brian Gumbel thing about black coaches. I know he had a couple powerful comments about that and about the league not really doing anything and really still at a standstill, which I talk about in the book. He's had his moments, but you kind of really got to. And he talked about being a black coach and expectations people have for him that maybe aren't the expectations that he has for himself.
Yeah.
And he does what's comfortable for him. That's kind of how he explained it. Yeah.
You know, now that you mentioned that, I remember it was year before last, there was a black coaches summit in New York that I was invited to. Uh-huh. And Mike was one of the speakers. He did it by Zoom, you know, and I was like surprised. Oh, okay. So I guess there's certain indications that you get about people, black people, that they're kind of down with a cause, but not down in your face. Like you mentioned Brian Flores. He's got a black punter. and the brother who he brought in the quarterback, Dwayne Haskins.
Dwayne Haskins, yeah.
And
yeah.
I thought that, you know, without making any kind of statements, he said, okay, you know, I'm going to give this young cat, a chance.
Michael Vick. He brought Michael Vick in at the end of his career. Of course, they got that Hampton Roads connection there. A lot of people were like raising eyebrows. What are you bringing him in for? He actually helped them win a couple games that year when Ben Roethlisberger got hurt. So he, like you say, he's had his moments. Yeah. He's got to kind of look for him. Like you say, it's not in your face.
Yeah, that's a big clock. Yeah, he does it. So what did his brother, you talked about his brother. What kind of guy is his brother, and what kind of insights did he give you?
He was good. Ed, if you talked to him, you would swear you were talking to Mike.
Is that right?
They taught same inflections. It was scary. If you look at pictures of them, they really favor each other. And one thing I learned, he was a very good football player. He played at the University of Maryland and was a safety and got hurt. I don't know. He may have made it to the league. He talked a lot about them growing up. Mike is very comfortable with everybody. You know, he just kind of goes through the race thing. Everybody. He talks, communicates to everybody. His players, black and white, whatever, they all speak highly of him. And Ed talked about when they were young growing up, they played a lot of sports in Newport News with kids that weren't black. And they kind of got comfortable with it at a young age. And he looks at that as one of the reasons why Mike, whether it's at William & Mary, which is a predominantly white institution, and all the way up the ranks, he's just always had this natural comfort level, being able to communicate with a lot of different people and them in turn being able to communicate with him. I think that's one of his special gifts as a coach, that he just has this natural vibe with his players. And I've always spent a lot of time talking about how that's one of his big attributes, is getting to know them as people, getting them and them getting to know him and feeling comfortable enough to, and many times open up. And fascinating, in the introduction, he talks about how he, in the morning, he has a cup of coffee and he watches the players as they come into the facility and studies them. And sometimes is able to read maybe a player is down or whatever. And sometimes he'll approach them and talk, and sometimes they'll respond, sometimes they won't. But he said, I can't just be sitting in my office coaching. I got to get to know these men. They got to get to know me. That's part of my job. So, yeah, he races. He's shown his anger. I mean, when he was a few years ago, when the USC job. That's one of the angriest that anyone's ever seen him. And I really think about it. I talk about it in the book. I believe, and he picked out Andy Reid, and he picked out
Saban.
No, he picked out the Denver coach now. I'm sorry.
Sean Payton. Yeah, right.
And I think he picked him out for a reason. At that time, I think Andy Reid had only won one Super Bowl.
Right.
Sean Payton had won one Super Bowl. Their winning percentages were all very similar. So he's like, okay, so why are you asking me this? He said, then after he finished, he said, then he started some more. He said, you didn't ask Andy Reid that question.
Right.
You didn't ask Sean Payton that question. I mean, he was pissed.
Right.
Yeah.
I think he took that as a slap in the face and dignity, as, hey, another thing that a black coach has to deal with.
Right.
Another perception. Without saying it, he said it.
Right. Exactly. And it's almost like, just treat me as a human being.
There you go.
And when you don't treat me as a human being, So the bottom line. So, is there something in doing all your reporting? I remember you talked to Tony Dungy. You talked to like all the. Is there something, an aspect of Tomlin that was revealing, that as much as you covered him and around him, was there any insight that? Even as journalists, made you kind of say, "Oh, wow, that's kind of fascinating."
Yeah, that's good. That's a good question. I think as a coach, I when he was at William & Mary, I talked to his roommate, Sean Knight, who's a quarterback, and they were roommates for I think 3 of the 4 years there, and they were very close. Sean was the quarterback, Mike was a wide receiver, and he talks a lot about, even at that stage, how they used to talk about game planning and strategy. And there was an incident of a player who, when the quarterback before Sean was there, he was catching all the passes. And then when the quarterback left, I guess teams started pushing their coverage to him. So then the quarterback, Sean, started throwing more passes to Mike. It was becoming obvious there was a rift that people were like, okay, he's throwing it to his roommate. And they talked about it before a game, you know, hey, you know, what are we gonna, you know, we got to look at this situation. They were aware that it was a problem. They weren't just into their world, but me, they looked at, you know, Mike had this ability to look at the whole big picture. And I guess in this particular game, the guy had like four touchdowns, like a school record, four touchdown catches. But Mike still got his. He had like a 80-yard touchdown on the first play of the game. But they were aware, Mike was aware of the dynamic of the situation and that it could possibly cause a problem. So to answer your question, Bill, he has this ability to very astute. And I don't think he gets enough. You know, he's looked at it as a motivator, which right. A lot of black coaches, that's how they view that. Motivator, that's what they do. You know, black players relate to him. Very intelligent guy, understands the game, just doesn't feel like he has to get, you know, he's not holding that clipboard out, you know, in front of his face on the sideline. Right. He's got the headset on, but that's not it. He doesn't feel like he has to show you how smart he is.
Right.
Trust me, he's involved in every aspect of the offense, defense. Even when Dick LeBeau was there, one of his coaches that I talked to was saying that. He said, hey, people thought it was just all Dick LeBeau. He said, no, Mike's right up in there handling it. And so I would think that if people take the time to read through it, they'll see that this guy, going all the way back to when he was a college player, had this really incredible insight into the game of football. William & Mary, Jimmy Laycock, the coach, he was unusual in the fact that he really encouraged his players to really understand the game. You know, Brian Daboll was at William & Mary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Buffalo coach.
Yeah, John, right.
Also at William & Mary. So you got three. And Dan Quinn, who was there for a year, was also, you know, who's, so yeah, four guys that were actually NFL head coaches that spent some time at William & Mary, which is, you know, you think about it, it's pretty unbelievable. It's a small school and all that. And they said a lot of it came from the coach, the way he encouraged his players to really think the game. You know your role, you know, but understand where it fits into the overall type of thing. And they said it's no coincidence that a lot of these guys have gone on to, you know, to become NFL head coaches.
Hey, go ahead, Jamal.
How about the, you know, the general's persona that he has? You know, you mentioned the motivating factor, the great press conferences, the one-liners, the, you know, the leadership part. Like where does that come from? Was he always like that?
Yeah, I mean, even in, you know, like, well, I opened a book with his personality. The first few paragraphs in the book is from Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn was a first-year assistant coach. Mike Tomlin was a senior wide receiver. And I open up with him. Basically, Mike Tomlin invites Dan Quinn to a frat party. So if you can imagine a college player inviting a coach to a fraternity party, just kind of tells you about this guy. You know, and apparently him and one of his teammates, they would strut around, you know, when they'd catch the ball on their teammates. I mean, he was a much nicer, much calmer Antonio Brown in a way. He had that personality. I mean, you read it in the book, they talk about how he, you know, he got teammates and opponents riled up. He got teammates riled up. He got coaches riled up. You know, he was just his personality was always there. They talk about his speaking voice. Coaches talk about, you know, he's got this booming voice. It's a very distinctive voice. When he interviewed for the Tampa Bay job, and Tony Dungy, he spoke with Tony Dungy and Kiffin, Monty Kiffin. He talked about two brilliant defensive minds, and they said, you know, 5 minutes into the interview, you know, he's breaking down everything, and they're like mesmerized. And at that time, he was 27, 28. They were just mesmerized by this kind. You know, Rondé Barber, who, you know, God love him, he was great. He had some unbelievable quotes in the book. Mm. He basically credits his career to Mike Tomlin, his Hall of Fame career. He spoke about him at his Hall of Fame speech, and how he just, this young coach comes in, they're all looking at him, you know, sideways, and he just gives them these pointers and these steps, and they immediately see how it made them a better player. John Lynch was older than Mike Tomlin. When Mike Tomlin, like, who is it? What is this? Who is this guy? and he just won them over. Just, hey, I studied your tape. I think John Lynch said he had like, he showed him a video like 63 plays that he had from the previous year, and he broke each one of them down. And, you know, John Lynch was like, wow, you know, and things made them better as players. And I won't give away the quote. There's an unbelievable quote that he describes the difference between, Ronnie Barber describes the difference between Mike Tomlin and Herm Edwards. I recommend the reading. I'll leave it at that. But it's eye-opening. And wow. It compares them, because Herm Edwards was a defensive back coach until he took the Jets job. And then Mike Tomlin took that job. So pretty interesting.
That's why, I need to dig into that. On their face, they would seem similar, right, in terms of the
outward. Both good coaches.
Yeah. Wait a minute, do you have the book? I'm in Baltimore. I don't have my book. Do you have your book with you, Jamal?
I have the digital.
It's in the Tampa Bay chapter.
What's happening? Yeah. Okay.
That's I think it's like the fifth or sixth chapter. But yeah.
I'll keep him busy. I'm trying to quote.
I recommend it. Now you might have to put a warning label on it, but I think it's a fascinating quote. And I asked Rondé about it. I said, are you cool with this? Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, I don't care if I said it. You know, he was unbelievable. He was great. He was, that is really a sharp guy, Rondé Barber. I mean, really sharp. If you listen to his Hall of Fame speech, just
his Hall of Fame speech was classic.
Yeah, just unbelievable,
and
you know.
And I think I forgot exactly what he said about Tomlin, but I just remember it was another insight into Tomlin.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow. And I forgot what he said, but he said, whatever it was, it changed his career.
Yeah. He Tomlin put the jacket on, you know, the night before they put the Hall of Fame jacket on. Mm-hmm. And normally it's set up where, you know, a player does it. And it was supposed to be John Lynch. But they said, no, they agreed. You know, Rondé had already said, no, Mike T is going to put the jacket. So Mike T, it was training camp. So he missed evening practice at Latrobe, PA, you know, which he never does. Mm-hmm. And to put the jacket on Rondé Barber, which I thought was really, you know, he's not even on the same team anymore. So just think about that for a minute, that dynamic. You know, still his coach putting a jacket on a Buccaneers player. And speak just the high level of respect that Rondé and so many other guys, you know, have for him.
Yeah. Yeah. How did this book, we were saying that you did the book on Edgerrin. And I'd imagine it was totally different. You know, the personalities, Edgerrin participated. So let's start with that, you know, but I imagine just in terms of a workmanship, being a journalist, did that make it easier? The fact that one guy was participating, and I guess if somebody doesn't participate, you don't have any qualms about following the truth where it leads.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, the first few months of the book, and I am proud of myself, I wrote this book in a year, which I never thought I'd be able to do. And but I was just motivated to do it, and we just felt like we said earlier, I felt the timing was important. It, you know, came out next year. We just felt like this year, it was important to have it come out. But when I first started the book, it was a very generic Mike Tomlin book. I'll be honest with you, for the first few months, and then I really lucked into it one day. Just on a hunch, I called Cyrus Meary, who worked with Johnny Cochran for years, you know, and we connected and we started talking. He started telling me things about Mike Tomlin and how the job came about that I just had no idea about. And then he said, you know, you need to talk to John Wooten. You know John Wooten?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I know his name. He said, well, look, I'm going to put you in touch with him. I'm going to call him up and I want you to talk to him. And John Wooten just blew my world up.
Yeah.
And when you read about his involvement, how involved he was with Mike Tomlin getting the Steelers job, his relationship with Dan Rooney. And Dan Rooney, I think I really tipped my cap to him. I covered him. I saw him every now and then. We didn't talk that much. I wish we had talked more. He, to me, when you look at the Rooney Rule, people say, why isn't it working? Why is it not working? At least during that time when there were more black coaches being hired, a lot of it had to do with Dan Rooney. And he became the ambassador to Ireland, you know, under President Obama. Then he passed away in 2017, and people wondered what's wrong with the Rooney Rule. Well, there's no more Dan Rooney's.
Right.
The owners that are there now are there. Right. And, you know, Goodell. It's only can come from the owners. There has to be a true commitment to that.
Right.
Dan Rooney had it. I mean, he had already interviewed two. It came out there was one. He actually had interviewed two coaches of color before he interviewed Mike Tomlin. So he had already satisfied the Rooney Rule requirements. You know, if he had hired Russ Grimm, who everybody thought was going to get the job, he could have, you know, gone to bed, you know, sleeping okay. You know, like most owners say, oh, well, we satisfied the Rooney Rule requirements, you know, which is what most of them say.
Right.
So he had satisfied them. But there was something about Mike Tomlin. And I'll tell you, the relationship that he had with John Wooden, which went all the way back to when John Wooden replaced Chuck Knoll at guard for the Cleveland Browns. And that's where their relationship started. And he always had this affinity with Dan Rooney. And their relationship was so long. So they had had their annual meeting with the Fitzpatrick Alliance. They had their annual meeting where they give the ready list for the, you know, the black coaches that are on the list this year. And Tony Dungy had encouraged this one year Mike Tomlin had been in Minnesota as the coordinator. Just 1 year. And Tony Dungy encouraged John Wooten to put Mike Tomlin's name on the ready list. And they presented this to Dan Rooney, who up until that point did not know who Mike Tomlin was. This was in December. They hired him a month later. And John Wooten, he told Dan Rooney, as a favor, I'm asking, could you just go see this young man, Mike Tomlin? Now, Dan Rooney flies. Now, people don't know this. Dan Rooney flies to Minneapolis. All we know is that Mike Tomlin interviewed in Pittsburgh, but he actually flew to Minneapolis first. And he calls John Wooten back the next day and says, John, do you have a minute to talk? I said, yeah. He said, I just got to invite this young fellow, Mike Tomlin, to Pittsburgh. And that's kind of where it started. But if John Wooten doesn't do that, maybe that doesn't happen then. I mean, I'm sure maybe Mike Tomlin would have gotten a job. And another irony is that he wasn't going to get the Minnesota job. These names keep slipping me. Brad Childress, who I really tip my cap to as well. He was great. And he was going to hire Steve Spagnuolo, who was former Giants coordinator, who's now the coordinator with the Chiefs. They were assistant coaches at Philadelphia. And he was going to hire Steve Spagnuolo. He calls, he reaches out, and Andy Reid calls him up one day and says, hey, I know what you're trying to do. Leave him alone. Get out of here. So that was his first choice. And then he kind of goes back to this young coach that he heard a lot about. And he remembers seeing him at some seminars and, you know, pro days. So Mike Tomlin actually wasn't his first choice. So things kind of fell into place for, you know, Mike was at the right place at the right time. He was prepared for the moment. And, he spends 1 year in Minnesota. You know, so he goes to Pittsburgh. He's, 34 years old, which, you know, besides his skin color, the age, I mean, people are like, what? But that was the Steelers' M.O. Chuck Knoll was in his 30s. Bill Carroll was 35. So it really wasn't that. What was unusual was that he was black.
Right.
You know, right. And of course, in Pittsburgh, had looked at that, it wouldn't have been that big of a shock because he was a defensive coach and he was a young coach.
Yeah.
So he fit their mold. They didn't go outside the mold. They just hired somebody that didn't look like most coaches. And that was the shock. But they did their homework. It was what they've always done. They hired young coaches. And he fit that mold perfectly.
This is BVK for Ocean City Tourism, OCMD Streaming Audio. On March 11th, 2024, the title of the spot is STSA Leisure Summer. This is a 30-second composite stereo streaming audio mix.
Get away with friends to the laid-back Maryland coast, where you can catch up while casting off and hang 10 while hanging out, where a day on board is never boring and full throttle is half the fun, where you can sink a putt, raise a glass, and there's always room for one more round. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Did you talk to Roethlisberger?
No. No, I did not talk to him. I reached out to a lot of people that I didn't talk to. But a lot, I'll be honest with you, there's some unbelievable quotes I have some unbelievable quotes from Mike Tomlin. They're just not out of his mouth. But right. Ben Roethlisberger is interesting because he was such a great talent. And if you want to look at some of the things that Mike didn't do, I think there was an issue with how some players were handled. They talk about that a lot. Talk to Casey Hampton, who was great. How players viewed that, how Ben pretty much kind of did what he wanted. And players had a problem with that, especially if you're kind of cracking down on other guys.
Right.
And Antonio Brown was given a leash, but not a leash as long as Ben Roethlisberger. And there was a lot of resentment going on with that. So I think if you want to look at how that team kind of imploded, you know, they end up having to trade Antonio, you know, Le'Veon Bell leaves. If you want to look back, and if he could probably do it over again, I think he might look at that a little differently, saying, you know, that's kind of where it came. Those guys were incredibly talented, man. Some of those Steelers teams were just incredibly talented. He should have probably won a couple more Super Bowls by now. But Le'Veon Bell was also hurt a lot. He missed some playoff games. So they never like were all totally at full strength. And then the 1 year when AB's in the locker room, you know, with the Facebook Live. Things that went on with that team beyond just football. But he's still there after 17 years. I don't know if many coaches could deal with all the ups and downs that have been there with the Steelers since he's taken over.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, he's there now. You know, the last few years, you know, he hasn't had a losing record, but he's kind of at that, you know, they're successful, but not Super Bowl successful.
Right. Yeah.
How do you view it, you know, having covered him even in the past and then, you know, writing this book, how do you view the future, the current situation and the future situation? If he continues, doesn't look like they'll be under 500 this year either. No. He'll have a winning record this year, it looks like. Yeah. But they don't quite look like Super Bowl contenders. If he keeps that up, you know, will the, you know, what's the Pittsburgh market going to want? And will he still be there? And can you see him being somewhere else?
Well, as I've learned with the Rooney, they don't care what the Pittsburgh market wants because they didn't want Mike Tomlin initially. And for the last couple of years, I mean, all the media in Pittsburgh writing that he should be fired.
Yeah.
So the Rooney's just on now Art. They've shown they don't really care what the media thinks. I mean, because a lot of teams would have caved in a long time ago and had probably made a change. I think a lot of, you know, answer your question, I think a lot of it comes down to quarterback. What happens with Pickett? Does he develop or does he just stay on the same career path? I think if he develops, they've got some weapons. This draft they had was exceptional. The offensive tackle, Joey Porter's son at cornerback.
Yep.
I mean, there's a defensive tackle that's playing very well. There's a defensive end. They did very well. There's a tight end.
Receivers.
Yeah. Pickens. I mean, they've got talent, but it's going to come down to, you know, in the NFL now, how good is your quarterback?
Right.
I think for the future, this year, I don't know. I think they'll make it, but making the playoffs, maybe they win 10 games, they win 11, they'll be in the playoffs. Now you look at Cincinnati, Burrow's out.
Right.
You know, Cleveland, we don't know what their quarterback situation. If you look at the Steelers' record, they're doing pretty good overall in the AFC. So they should, unless they just totally collapse, they should be in the playoffs. Are they a team that's going to go deep in the playoffs? I don't, unless Pickett just elevates his game, I don't see it. To me, next year would be his huge year. You know, you're in year three. If he's really not progressing much more, you're going to have to, because you got too much good talent around him to just kind of just continue to exist at that position. But I think Art Rooney, who's in charge now, they look at things like what I just said, the record. They're not swayed by all the other stuff. You know, he's saying, hey, we're right in playoff position right now. That's kind of how they look at it.
What are you talking about?
it's different,
right?
But that's how they look at it. So, unless something just really happens, look at the offensive coordinator. Everybody's wanting him fired.
Right.
He stayed with him. And I talked to Doug Williams, who worked with Mike in Tampa, and he said, hey, I would have gotten rid of him. He said, but that's Mike. Right. He said, that's just how Mike is. He's very loyal, and he doesn't, let outside stuff bother him. He said, but yeah, it was obvious this guy's not doing what he needs to be doing. He said, but Mike didn't give up on him. He said, it's just how he is as a coach in general. And he is extremely loyal. There were a lot of coaches there on that staff who he was in college with.
Hmm.
So his loyalty, I guess, I think a lot of coaches are loyal to guys, maybe even beyond when they should be loyal to them.
Right. Hey, Jeff, before we let you go, I guess my last question, and it kind of gets to the coordinator thing. And yeah. I know Mike got into a thing with who's the brother at the NFL Network who is now suing them? But he got with
the, you're talking about the reporter?
The reporter.
Yeah.
I should know because we're friends.
Yeah.
but he brought up the fact that Mike had never hired a black coordinator.
Right.
And Mike kind of went off on him. Or I don't know if he went off on him, but he wasn't happy.
He has one. He has one now. But
this one.
Yeah. He's very sensitive about that. Looking at some of the stuff, some of the moves, I don't always know if they were his moves. Mm-hmm. And he says, hey, everything that's happened is my approval. But some of the things like Todd Haley, to me, that hire, there were no, we talk about connections. There was no connection between Todd Haley and Mike Tomlin. They never worked together. Todd Haley's father had been a longtime scout with the Steelers.
Right.
But Dick Haley, but there was no connection. A lot of people said that he had interviewed with Jim Caldwell, who he knew. That would, to me, if that's who he wanted, and how you see most coaches seem to get to hire the coordinator they want. Right. I just find it hard to believe that Todd Haley was the guy. Mike said that he wanted to change the offense, and that's why he brought in Todd Haley. They kind of dumbed it down, went to more of a short passing game at that point. Ben did have some of his better years with Todd Haley as coordinator, but if you're just looking at, why didn't you hire Jim Caldwell here, or why would you hire, those are the hires or moves that, would make you kind of, say, wonder what's going on. But yeah, he's very sensitive to that. He does have a defensive coordinator now who's black. I don't know. He has a lot of black coaches on his staff, but coordinators are looked at that one position. You're one step away from being a head coach. Why hasn't he developed more? When I talked to Tony Dungy, he talks about how he targeted Mike Tomlin,
right?
Targeted, Herm Edwards. He targeted Lovie Smith with the intent of trying to develop them. And he was very intentional about it. He didn't shy away from it. He wanted them to interview, talk to reporters, put him out front, because he learned that from Dennis Green in Minnesota. Dennis Green allowed him to spread his wings. So has Mike done it the way Tony Dungy's done it that way? No, he hasn't.
But like you said, he's more comfortable now. He's older, and I think the Flores hire, like you said, I think that was very important. Because now look where Flores now. Flores has got back in the league, and now he's a defensive coordinator.
Yeah,
A step away from another position, maybe. So
you hope that's going to happen. That he'll get another opportunity.
Well, depending on how well Minnesota plays, I guess.
thank goodness for Dobbs.
Oh my God, he had Dobbs. There's another one for you. A lot of people are shaking their head. Dobbs was on the team twice, and they let him go.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd rather have. I'll be honest with you. I'd rather have Dobbs than Kenny Pickett. Just my personal opinion. They had him. Was that his call? I don't. Those are questions I don't really have an answer for. But you say, wow, if they had Dobbs, where would they be? Or at least in the backup quarterback situation, they'd be in a lot, better situation. Was that his call? Was that a call over him? I don't know.
And Pickett was a second round pick?
No, he was a first round pick.
The first round pick,
but he was like 20. And some people said that they wanted to draft the quarterback who's now with Tennessee.
Oh, the kid, black quarterback or the
white guy
from Liberty?
Levitt.
No, not him. The one before that.
Because he won the black kid.
Yeah, black quarterback. And everybody said they wanted him because he was a mobile quarterback.
Right.
But when they drafted Pickett, and everybody was like, oh, okay. So, again, was that his call? There's some moves that have happened that you just kind of wonder. But the one move you don't wonder about, receivers. He talks about he's always had this affinity for receivers because he played receiver. Right. He said maybe one reason why he's cut some. Look at the receivers that he's had. I mean, he's had some phenomenal. And I see Dallas just re-signed a receiver, Martavis Bryant, who I tell you, most talented receiver I ever saw in my life when he was healthy. I mean, he wasn't a Randy Moss type, but 6'4", had the agility, the unbelievable speed. He wasn't like a stiff tall. He could move. They had him, they had Antonio Brown. I mean, they've had some unbelievable. He's had some unbelievable receivers.
I actually didn't realize that until I was reading the book. I always looked at him as kind of like a – because he played – he was a coach. He was a defensive backs coach, so I always figured that was his background. Yeah. I didn't even realize he was a wide receiver.
Yeah, and he switched. They switched him because he was an offensive coach. And then Keith Butler, who ended up being his defensive coordinator in Pittsburgh, they had worked together in Memphis, and then Keith Butler joined him at Arkansas State. He had developed this relationship with Keith Butler, so then he moved to defense, and that's where he started picking up on the defense. And coaches said, well, that's going to be good because you have an offensive background. It's good for you to learn the defensive side.
Right.
Yeah. Well, this is great stuff, man. So the author is John Harris. The book is Tomlin, The Soul of a Football Coach. Tomlin is just an intriguing figure. And so I think you struck gold, not only because of the timing, but just because of, Tomlin, just because nobody really knows this guy. You don't see him. You only see him on the sideline. He's intense. He is the definition of racially neutral, at least on the outside.
Right.
Yes.
He deserves a book. And if he were white, he'd probably have a book. He's kind of, think about like Parcells minus one ring, maybe. Wait, Parcells has what, one ring, two rings?
Here's something to consider before you let me go. His career path, there are very few black coaches that have had a career path like his. He becomes a graduate assistant. He gets a job right out of college. How many black coaches do that? Right. He gets a job right. He graduated in what, May, and he's coaching the VMI in the fall. The next year he gets a graduate assistantship in Memphis. So he kind of was different. And he started like many black white coaches.
Right, exactly.
And these older coaches kind of, if you'll read, they kind of took him under his wing. They worked with him. And then there was these connections, too, from William & Mary, some coaches that hired him. They played together. Yeah. So there were these connections all throughout his career. People knew him. But he had support. I mean, you can't do it without a village. He definitely had a village.
Yeah. And I said, let you go. What about his parents? What were his parents' background?
his dad, his father, his birth father was a great athlete, but he and his mom, you know, separated. Mm-hmm. So his mom, you know, raised him. His stepdad, I think Mike was young when they remarried, and he was a tremendous influence on him and his brother as far as positivity. And one of the things that his brother talks about is growing up as we did. For us, it was very important to be good fathers. That's why Mike does a lot of, in the off season, works with a lot of youth groups, talks a lot about the father. It's very, obviously it had a huge impact on his life. His parents had, his mother wanted him to be a lawyer. Huh. Was not happy when, you know, $8,000 at VMI, like, what? $8,000, really? You know, that type of thing. What are you doing? You went to William and Mary, boy. You know, what kind of school that was? You're going to be a football coach. So he had to overcome that. And he did, but that wasn't mom. You know how I just tell mom no, but he told her no and improved it. And even when he interviewed for the Steelers job, she says, I didn't think he was going to get it. You know, do you know how hard it is? You know, do you know how hard it is to get a job at your age like that? So nobody really kind of thought this was going to happen. It just somehow remarkably happened, you know. And the fact that he's still there.
Yeah, and it worked out.
It's remarkable in itself, you know.
Yeah.
Right. And you got three kids. You talk to the kids, his wife, or they are off limit?
No, I didn't talk to the family. His son is a wide receiver. His oldest son, Dino, is a wide receiver at Boston College.
Okay.
In fact, I was watching them on TV the other night. They played Pitt. And so he got a chance to see him because they played in Pittsburgh. He doesn't get a chance to do that too much. No, this is strictly a football. You know, I think in time, maybe one day he'll do his story, the Mike Tomlin autobiography. This was strictly, I just wanted people to know, because I didn't know, just his career path. I just thought it was such a mystery. People didn't really know how he got to the point that he got to. So I really spent a lot of time just trying to make that clear and just show this guy, he earned everything. I mean, he earned it. He you know, at a young age, he decided he wanted to be a coach and he worked at small schools. He was never at he was at the University of Cincinnati, was the biggest school he was at, but he never really was at a, you know, Power Five type program where he was in a bowl game, national, none of that. Just small, under the radar type coaching jobs.
Yeah. Hey, man, well, good for you, though, man. That's great. I mean, great. Even Edgerton, your book on Edgerton was great.
Edge,
is somebody who's just a very unique, a unique individual.
Edge is cool. He's very, you know, financially as astute as any athlete I've ever met. Unbelievable. Yeah.
That's great, man. So maybe you could tell us, at some point, we're going to know who your next target is.
I'm working on that. Hopefully, I have something pretty soon. I'm definitely working on it. Yeah.
No, but this is great, though, man. Good luck with this. I hope Tomlin, I hope he loves it, and gives you a shout out. We just were talking with, do you know JTP, JJT, Jock?
Oh yeah, in Dallas. Yeah, I live in Austin, so I mean, I haven't seen him, but I've been following his book on Deion.
Yeah, so it's all good, man. So it's all this stuff is very good, very inspiring. You know, the quote unquote younger generation, the younger generation of Black sports writers is doing it. That's great, doing these very important biographies. So congratulations, man.
My favorite sports book is your book, Bill. So that's always been my the best sports book I ever read. So I'll say that to the end. Unbelievable.
Hey, but it's all good though, man. You know, we're it's all very inspiring, you know. It's all very inspiring. So listen, man, so our guest has been the great John Harris, a tremendous, well-rounded journalist. You know, really was a solid, always has been a very solid journalist. So this is great. This book is just sort of another evolution. So good luck with it, man. And we'll bring you back maybe when they go to the Super Bowl. Although
You never know. You never know.
Hey, this crazy season. Anything is possible, right?
Yeah.
Though I'm kind of politically pulling for Lamar Jackson.
This seems to be his year, man. This seems to be his year.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. That's another conversation. We'll see. All right, John. Thanks so much, man.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. I really do. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right, then. Y'all have a great weekend.
All right, man. Take care. Right. So that was a great John Harris. That was great, man. Yeah, I'm looking forward to digging into the book. I've got the book.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to digging in here because Tomlin is a very fascinating guy, you know.
Yeah, the little I read, you know, first few chapters, it was, you know, like I said, I learned some stuff right there. Just didn't realize he was a wide receiver, you know, some of the college stories, you know. And like we just said, I mean, that's a guy who people want to get to know, especially other black people are very curious about, you know, who this guy really is. You know, obviously there's, you know, along racial lines, he doesn't really say that much, but even what you're saying, you know, he does participate, you know, in certain things that show you that he knows what time it is.
What time it is, yeah. Yeah, and that's there, you know, with black folks in this country, I'm sure since the first African person of African descent put their step foot on this crazy ass continent in the 17th century, we had to figure this shit out. And everybody didn't do everything.
Right.
You know, and that's probably the secret of surviving, that you had we had a great diversity. You couldn't pin people down. You know, so you know, from Clarence Thomas and Thurgood Marshall to Uncle Tom to Malcolm X, you know, right. Fannie Lou Hamer to Condoleezza Rice, you know,
right. So, right. Yeah. But you know, I'll put Tomlin closer to the Malcolm X side than
I would put him much closer to the Malcolm X side. No question about it. All right, man. So listen, this has been a great show, great get. We'll next week, Jamal, you know, you'll give us the black quarterback rankings that we have been desperately waiting right. for.
I'll be ready.
You like my brother.
I was scared of the game that we're gonna lose one. I thought we were gonna lose Lamar last night with that ankle.
Oh man.
But it turned out we lost Burrow.
I know. Yeah, everybody in the arena, man, was like, hush.
Right.
You know, whenever he stays down more than like a couple seconds, everybody's like, you know, but that's a question for the next show. Will that change? You know, all people pouring all this money into starting quarterbacks when in fact should you now invest money in like backups? Since whoever's gonna your starting quarterback is really gonna get fucked up. It's gonna get hurt. I mean, it just goes without saying. So
it's true. I mean, even me as a fantasy football manager, I was thinking to myself the other day, I was like, I need to have next year, I'm drafting two good quarterbacks.
Right.
You know, these guys aren't gonna last. It's a miracle right. if a guy makes it through the whole season.
I know. So that will be our next conversation about, you know, do we pour money into one great quarterback? Or do we always have two really good quarterbacks?
Well, don't worry, Bill. As soon as there are more black quarterbacks, like the black quarterback is the majority, then all of a sudden they'll be devalued and you'll have two per team. Don't worry about it, Bill.
Yeah. Of course.
As soon as that happens, we're devaluing the position. We're bringing in two guys because y'all are always getting hurt.
They're not really important, you know. Yeah. Like racehorses, like running backs. Right. They'll be like running backs.
Right.
Like a dime a dozen.
It's speaking of that, you know, speaking of John talking about your book being his favorite, I was in Costa Rica this last weekend. Mm-hmm. It was like a family get together, my aunt's 80th birthday.
Oh, okay.
My uncle, Godfrey, he told me he read your book, 40 Million Dollar Slaves, for the first time just a few months ago. And he was just going on and on how great it was. And please tell him it was great and the detail and the jockeys and all that stuff. So people are still reading it for the first time, loving it.
No, that's great. We'll have him on the show. You talk about it.
Definitely.
Yeah, that was Bill. That was Bill Roden's out of body experience. I read it now and I said, "Man, how'd you write this?"
You know? He said he loved all the footnotes and all that. You know.
Yeah, it was a lot, man. Yeah. All right, brother. So, Open Flag football is going well. I know you've been removed as a coach, but you're now an advisor, right?
Yeah, I'm an advisor, and then now, can you believe my Kareem has a game tomorrow? Tomorrow's Saturday. Tomorrow at 8 a.m. in what? Randall's Island.
What?
So I basically gotta leave here like 6:30 in the morning.
Oh my god! Ridiculous. Yeah, well, that's what it is, man. This is still Kareem. You better win. We're not going all this way.
Seriously.
So is he playing quarterback?
Yeah, he's playing quarterback. But this is he's 9 and they're playing 11U, so he'll probably be backup quarterback.
Okay. All right.
You know.
Well, that's acceptable.
I don't know if it's acceptable enough for me to get up at 6:30 and drive an hour to Randall's Island, but
that's tough.
I don't wanna kill any dreams, you know.
No, you gotta do it, brother. And we'll expect the detail. We'll expect details.
All right.
All right, everybody.
Don't forget, Bet Online. Bet Online, brought to you by Bet Online. Also, of course, you know where to find us on social media at Bros Pod, on Twitter at Bros Pod, on Instagram. Subscribe to us on YouTube, Bros Pod as well.
Yeah, and buy John Harris's book.
Yes.
On Mike Tomlin.
Yes.
Trust me, great subject, great read about somebody you don't hear about. And, you know, if you haven't been inoculated, get the new vaccine. Make sure
there's a new one out.
There's a new one out. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You must not look at the commercials. Kelsey commercials.
I thought those are old. Every time I see the commercial, I just think about Aaron Rodgers being so mad at Kelsey for doing these commercials. Yeah.
I know. He's called Mr. Pfizer.
So mad. I'm like, Jesus. He's really serious about this anti-vax stuff.
Unbelievable. Aaron Rodgers got what he deserved. All right, man.
All right.
Everybody. Hang in there, everybody, you know, and continue to pray. We need it. God bless.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.